Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning again. So the idea for this talk came about because I noticed that merit shows up frequently in our chants and scriptures. We offered merit, I think, twice during our chanting today in the echoes. We have a merit board in the hallway where we offer merit to folks who are ill or in difficulty or who have passed away. We see it regularly in various writings and sutras, like the Abhidhamma Saka and the Diamond Sutra, which I'll reference today. So it seems like it's like kind of everywhere. And yet I'd only really thought about merit just a little bit. And so I kind of felt like it just deserved a little more of my attention. So I started practicing a little more directly with merit, and this talk is kind of what I feel like I gained from that. So primary questions I want to address with this talk: what is merit really, and what's happening with merit when we offer it? The most basic definition that I feel comfortable with is that merit is kind of like a protective energy force that's generated by wholesome acts of body, speech, and mind. So there's a, definitely a moral kind of ethical angle there that, on a basic level, when we're practicing with and keeping, working with and keeping the precepts, we're generating merit. It can also be seen kind of as the energy of karma. Beneficial actions generate positive merit, and the result and result in beneficial outcomes. But karma is more complex than that. And so I think we need to dig deeper than just that kind of surface layer. And just a small caveat, I mean, I found references to merit in so many places. And I chose just a few here. So if you're like, wait, but what about merit in that scripture? I couldn't fit them all in. So there we go. So we've probably, most of us, heard the koan about Bodhidharma and Emperor Wu. When Bodhidharma arrived in China, Emperor Wu invited him to the palace. And Wu was a devout Buddhist. He had built hundreds of temples, funded monasteries, ordained thousands of monks, and translated many, many scriptures. And so he was looking for validation. And Wu pointed to his actions and asked Bodhidharma, "What is the merit of my deeds?" Now, he expected Bodhidharma's response to be something like, "Well, Your Majesty, your merit is as vast as the ocean. You will surely be reborn in the highest heaven." Bodhidharma's answer, however, was, "No merit whatsoever." Now, Wu would have thought, as he asked this question, and was this kind of a common view in China and Indian culture at that time, that merit was kind of a individual spiritual bank account. Wu believed that by doing good deeds, he accumulated merit, which was deposited into his personal account. And folks believed that this merit was useful in giving them a potentially fortuitous future birth. Merit was also considered helpful for ancestors who had died. There's a story in the Pali Canon where the Buddha is counseling King Bimbisara. The king's been hearing noises outside his palace at night, and the Buddha says these noises are pretas, or hungry ghosts, who were in previous lives Bimbisara's relatives. They're hanging out there outside the palace because they're hungry and they can't eat the food that the king eats. And they're crying out in hunger. So Buddha encourages the king to do some meritorious deeds so that his merit can feed the pretas. So as is suggested, as the king gives gifts of cloth and food to monks, the merit generated by his acts allows the pretas to receive those gifts as well. These were commonly held beliefs in this time in India and China, And that merit is useful for one's own future rebirth or to assist ancestors who've passed along and might need assistance. And they're still held by Buddhists in many countries today. Later on, Mahayana and Huayan Buddhism blew these ideas of personal merit and the personal benefits of merit generation wide open. Merit became universal and immeasurable, not to be owned or held by an individual. In the last chapter of the Avatamsaka Sutra, Samantabhadra makes 10 great vows, which are examples for all bodhisattvas. Samantabhadra's fifth vow is to rejoice in the merit generated by others. And their 10th vow is to dedicate all merit to all sentient beings so that all can attain Buddhahood. So we can see this shift from individual merit earning and giving to merit being more of a cosmic or infinite force. Now, this idea of an energy force floating around. Some folks might feel kind of an aversion to it. I think when we view it from the perspective of our kind of Eurocentric individualist values, where we're all separate individual beings, this idea of a cosmic energy force might not really make sense. However, when we consider it along with the teaching of anatta, or no separate self, where we recognize that we're all interconnected, it's much more useful to look at it from that perspective. We've experienced that sense of emerging and connecting with phenomena and beings just in this moment. And from that place, we can begin to understand the idea of this as this energy force more directly. We know that we're not really so separate as we think we are sometimes, and we are powerful beings. Everything we do has an impact on this field of energy. We actually already know this, but we have an amazing capability of forgetting that truth. My presence, my choices, my attitude, even the privacy of my thoughts in my mind affect those around me, and those effects keep rippling out. When I think of this as a clear boundary of me, what I think of as a clear boundary of me is actually something co-created with all of these separate selfing phenomena that surround me and fill the universe. Separateness is an illusion. We co-arise with other beings. Humans, animals, plants, rocks, ocean, the weather. So, merit is a way of acknowledging what's actually happening here. It's a kind of description of the continuous flow of this kaleidoscopic reality that we're all a part of. We exist in vast, limitless fields of immeasurable merit. And this reflects the kind of the whole vibe of the Avatamsaka Sutra, which views all phenomena as interconnected and interdependent. Any small act of merit echoes across the entire universe. So the Diamond Sutra also has vast descriptions of merit. The Buddha said to Subhuti that if a noble person learns and understands a four-line gatha of Dharma teaching and shares it with others, the body of merit produced from this small act would be immeasurably and infinitely greater than the gift of filling billions of worlds with jewels and riches. There are several comparisons like this in the Diamond Sutra of virtuous actions of a bodhisattva. And the body of merit is always immensely greater if that bodhisattva puts thorough intention on studying and learning just a piece of a sutra. Then we turn a little bit to a connection between merit and giving or generosity. In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha speaks of unattached giving, that when a bodhisattva gives a gift, They should give it without self or attachment to the gift. And when the Bodhisattva gives a gift in this way, the body of merit in that giving is also immeasurable. Dogen also addresses giving in the fascicle Shishobo. He writes about an attitude of selfless giving. Whether we give a gift, this is a quote from that fascicle, whether we give a gift of Dharma or of material things, the act is endowed with the merit that accords with giving. Even though we own nothing, there is no reason not to give. End of that quote. So true giving doesn't require wealth or ownership, doesn't require that we hold on to anything. In practice, we're called upon to cultivate a generous and selfless heart of giving, and we can offer merit, which is not ours to hold on to anyway. Dogen finishes that paragraph of that fascicle with this. Even if we have acquired a full measure of merit, sufficient to become a Buddha, we turn it over, dedicating it to living beings that they may become Buddhas and attain the way. So this idea of turning over or offering the merit, I'm going to get into that a little bit now, what's happening there. When the precentor chants the echo for us, they're acknowledging the universal aspect of merit. We don't individually get to pat ourselves on the back at the end of Zazen and chanting and give ourselves fist bumps. Instead, with the echo that the precentor chants, we release our self-attachment to the actions and dedicate it to others. We dedicate it beyond ourselves. It reminds us of our interconnection with beings throughout space and time. We dedicate merit so that all beings can attain the Buddha way. And do we dedicate merit to Buddhas and ancestors? And that could seem counterintuitive because they already have attained the way, it seems, and maybe don't need more merit. But this offering of merit that we give to Buddhas and ancestors is really a radical expression of gratitude for those feet who have trod the path ahead of us. We're kind of highlighting, emphasizing, reminding ourselves what they represent to us. And in a sense, we adorn them with the merit as we would in offering flowers or incense. We're giving them even more. And also, you know, we're not giving away a particular bit of merit that we accumulated today, this morning. We're making an offering from the unfathomably inexhaustible pool of merit that fills the universe and surrounds us. And that merit, while offered to Buddhas and ancestors, remains. It's not ours to hold or own. It is ours to offer and share. So offering the merit of our sincere acts of practice, whether they be Zazen or chanting, mindfulness, work practice, these are all the ownerless giving that Dogen was talking about. Merit is limitless, and I don't own it. It can't be given in the usual sense of giving. Yet our generous offering expresses our gratitude for our practices and benefits ourselves and current and future beings. I think this moment when the precentor begins to chant the echo is a real kind of poignant moment. As soon as we finish chanting the scriptures, they lead us in offering merit. We don't have a second to reflect. We don't look at the cosmic mirror and give ourselves positive affirmations. Oh, what great Zazen I did today. We don't hold that sense of goodness and well-being for a single breath. We turn it over and offer it to others. We offer the merit of our practice back to the lineage in recognition that the practice was never individually ours to begin with. The breath is not ours. The posture we hold in Zazen is not ours. I have a particularly favorite quote about merit. This is from the Kyoju Kaimon. May the Buddhas and ancestors have compassion upon us. Help us see the obstacle of suffering we have inherited from the limitless past and lead us in such a way that we share the merit that fills the universe. For they in the past were as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. Share the merit that fills the universe. Merit is a continual renewable energy source without harmful impact to the environment or the climate. It's universal. We don't hold or own it. And even though the universe is full of it, we continue to generate it. We generate it with authentic practice and humble activity. We're not trying to be seen building stupas, doing good deeds, keeping the precepts. I think in retrospect, this might be why we don't talk about merit much. Like, you know, it's in our liturgy and scriptures, but we don't actually have many conversations about it because we're not meant to consider the breadth and depth of our individual merit. We just offer it. We offer it with open hands and open hearts. It's just a very, very simple offering. That's my talk. Questions or comments?
If you have questions and you're in the room, please raise your hand. When I give you the mic, please say your name and hold the microphone close to your mouth. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, you can type your question into the chat and Kate will read it for you, or you're invited to type your name into the chat and Kate will unmute you so you can ask it yourself.
This is Ginkgo. Thank you for this talk. I think it's a great topic. And two or three things that I wanted to comment on. One is that in our robe verse, we say a formless field of benefaction that usually comes in the Sotoshu translation of that as a formless field of merit. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're talking about here. And I love it that you ended with share the merit that fills the universe, because the way I heard it way back when, I think this might have been from Ani P, the Tibetan person, said that, yeah, you give the merit away and it comes back to you. So, but I think it is that sharing is actually kind of what's going on there. But I want to share this story. This happened when I was a postulant. At some point, I got jury duty. So I'm traveling downtown and I'm wearing samurai, regular monk clothes. And my head, of course, is, you know, my hair is very short. And I'm on the bus. And I'm reading, this may have been when I was going back home, and I'm reading a murder mystery. So I'm not even like doing anything connected with the Dharma. This woman came up to me, never seen her before. She handed me a red and gold envelope and she said, "This is for you for bus fare." It had $2 in it, which was what bus fare was back then. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I didn't know what to do. I just said, "Thank you." And I thought, I should have said, gosho, I should have given her a blood. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things you're supposed to do. But all I could think of was to smile and say, thank you. And I just held on to that for a little while. And I was like, this is wild. You know, this is somebody I don't know. I didn't do anything directly for her. She saw that I was a monk of some sort and, you know, gave me this thing. And I thought, what it did for me was it illuminated this phrase that I had heard of called an economy of merit. Mm-hmm. So it really made it clear that I can think about, I'm giving my time and energy to the temple, and in return they're giving me, you know, room and board and whatever. And I'm kind of going, that's one way to think about it. This is not anything like that. Mm-hmm. So there's something else going on. It's a whole different way to think about transactions and mm-hmm. how do we live in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's been a profound piece of learning for me that I have really hung on to for a long time.
Yeah. I have also similarly noticed, and you know, I don't live here, but I'm here enough. I've seen folks come to the back, to the kitchen door, folks from the neighborhood, and just offer some food, a loaf of bread or whatever. And, you know, I've really thought about that. Like, in a sense, our temple is functioning that way. Like, we're functioning as that space that is giving people a place to give their gifts and know that we will appreciate them and lift them up. So yeah, thank you.
It's pretty cool stuff.
It is.
Apparently there's a word, my name is Guy. There's a word I learned from a friend in Dutch that apparently is really commonly used among Dutch people. It's Hunnen. It's spelled with a G. It's a funny, that's the way they pronounce it. And in German, it'd be Gönnen. And it means, I was trying to figure out what it, the translation, but it means grace, basically. And so they use it as a verb, though. And so, for example, if you're a gardener and you have a home garden, but you're going to move and you're going to leave your place that you currently live and move to a new place, you keep gardening anyways, even though you're probably not going to be able to harvest the fruits of the and the vegetables in the garden, because you're going to give this gift out into the world. Whoever is going to live there is going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And you just have faith that, you know, the place that you move to, probably someone else will have done that for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was really moved by that. And I thought, you know, I wish we had more Hunnen.
Well, I think we can offer it. Each yes. of us can offer it. Yes. Yeah.
Good morning. I think in the relative world, we rely on a certain amount of like recognition. You need to sort of be seen and like witnessed as like ready to do a thing or not. And I think a koan for me for so long has been like just relaxing into trust in this merit.
Mm-hmm.
Like with time, that's becoming more and more like things will just work out. Like it, you don't need the extra, you don't need like, I mean, in a relative sense, we do. We operate in both of these spheres.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more relaxing into like the trust of this merit to carry.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of practice over and over again to really practice selflessness in giving and, you know, offering ourselves and offering merit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello, it's Reju. When I lead work practice in the kitchen, we end by offering merit, and I say, who would like to offer merit? And sometimes, often, there's a question like, how do I do it? Or what am I doing? And I think you gave us like a long form answer, but how would you answer that question?
Thank you. That's a good question. It's actually, I think, pretty simple and heartfelt. Because I had witnessed that in the kitchen doing work practice with you, during Avatamsaka Sutra chanting, we always dedicate the merit at the end of our chanting. And for a little while, I offered to around the group for each person to offer merit to what felt significant to them. So the simple answer is, if you are feeling some goodness and you want to share that goodness out, you just you know, say, I offer the merit of this too, and you can offer it to whoever you want to or whatever you want to. You know, remember, it's limitless, and so you're not wasting it in any way.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Die Guy. You mentioned it at one point, the effects of your thoughts on, mm-hmm. on those around you, which over, oh, I don't know, the last several years has become so apparent, and how much people around you can feel. You know, no really overt gestures, nothing said, just the tone and the quality and the content of the thoughts. It's remarkable how much effect that's having on people around you.
Yeah, I agree. You know, what's going on in your head is going to come out in your actions, just in your attitude, your approach, it's going to be obvious. So, you know, caring for those thoughts is important.
Yeah, really critical, and amazing to me how much I can feel other people, even from a distance, especially the ones I know. You know, they're just, they're wide open.
Hi, this is Charlie. This might seem like a silly example, but the neighborhood buy nothing exchange, I love it so much. That is like the most pure example of meritorious giving to me, I feel like, in like my everyday life, right? I don't need this thing, right? So there's no, oh, this huge big give. It's just like, hey, I'm not using this thing. Who here can use this thing? And then you'll immediately see, oh, I've been looking for this. I need that. I'm going to use that. And then you just see it kind of bouncing around all throughout this tiny little micro universe of this one little neighborhood.
Yeah.
And just like, I don't know, that's so amazing to me. And thinking of that, just like kind of unfolding and expanding even beyond just the, like, I don't need this book anymore. Right. What if it became something else? Right. Something bigger.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's, I think kind of the idea that Guy was getting at a little bit, that Dutch idea. Yeah, just being open-handed and letting go of things that you don't, that you aren't useful to you, and they'll be useful to somebody else.
Yeah. Right. But especially, I think, not the thought of reciprocation.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not giving this gift because I'm going to get something in return. It's just
right. Including
here,
like
to the universe,
including thanks for giving it. Like you're not even giving, you're not even getting it to, so somebody's grateful to you for giving it. You're just open-handedly giving. Yeah. Yeah.
This is Nancy. Thank you for your talk. This brings to mind the sock bucket out in the foyer. Plug for the sock bucket. I made a drop yesterday, and what's, well, it wasn't a surprise, but it's interesting. The volunteers are, when I take it to the P-pop pop up every Saturday, they're really grateful. You know, they're like, oh, thank you for bringing this paper bag, you know, because everybody who has nothing to put their stuff in needs a paper bag, or they're going to potentially get stuff that day. And so I was distributing this and that. The folks who are there to get things, they don't necessarily thank me. I don't think anybody who's there to get something has ever looked at me in the eye and said, oh, thank you for that. And I don't know if that's just an indicator of where they're at, you know, or maybe they're sorry they have to be there. I don't know. But that atmosphere on that pop-up volunteer day, they make it very clear, the volunteers, that it's okay for you to be here and it's okay for you to take whatever you want. And if that eases your suffering, or it's, you know, it's not always just this, I'm homeless and I have to get this, you know, or I need more stuff than what I'm using for my substance. It's just, it's all, sometimes there's a radio going, sometimes it feels like a picnic, you know, and something, a little thing you said about how this is universal. I forget the sentence exactly, but I just flashed on that. It's like yesterday I felt that. It's just going out into the universe, you know. I don't know if it goes through the portal and then comes back. I'm not sure. I just want the Sangha to know that sock bucket goes a long, long way. Mm-hmm. And then when I make my pitch every quarter for people to donate, I want you to know how grateful folks are that they can pick something that they might need that day.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy, I would ask you, what do you feel like is your intention or motivation behind taking that offering to that community?
I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And it just, at the time, everything was just jumbled and up in the air. And it was right after that election in 2017 when things were really messed up, like not today, but it was there was something that somebody thought of that there could be some use for this, and there is a way for people who wanted to help that need get filled.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the simplest way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And it also I did it, and it scared me a whole bunch every time I did it. Every time I went to that site, I was like, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And that got worn down a little bit over the years. It's still there. It still feels like, wow, I'm watching suffering and I'm learning something and I'm doing it anyway, even though it's scary and it's kind of creepy sometimes. It's like, you know, I've been knocked down there when people are fighting and I happen to be in the middle of it. You know, it's like, rah, you know, there's chaos sometimes. It's kind of mellowed out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And I think that also gets to something that I didn't address in the talk, which is the merit board that's in the hallway. And when we offer merit to those who are ill or in difficulty or who have died, you know, what we're doing there, which it sounds like is kind of similar motivation for you, is like, it can feel really powerless to have somebody nearby who's very sick or to have a family member die. Like, what can I do? And so there, you know, as we can give something that isn't ours to give, as we can give, offer merit that, you know, doesn't belong to us, the same in, you know, having no power, like we can offer merit when there's nothing else we can do. And that sounds a kind of like what you're getting at with that. There's a desire to do something and that's what you're able to do.
Yeah, what you were saying was almost like ripples in a pond, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, here's these socks. Somebody's going to pick them up. But then that person that has socks now, that's going to make somebody feel better.
Yeah.
And then maybe in their day, they can show some kindness or some sympathy or something to the next individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, this is Annie Rose.
Hi, Annie.
I've been dealing with somebody in hospice for the first time.
Mm.
And I guess at the time we didn't see it coming because there was this giant incident and nobody knew what happened. And I ended up having to go somewhere at the time. So I didn't know what all happened. And then like for 3 months, there was this big mess and nobody knew what happened. And then after a while, somebody stopped walking after the incident. I was like, oh no, like this isn't good. And they couldn't walk. They went to the doctors, they went to the hospital, and like everything just was like bad. And then they finally just said, we're not doing any more hospital visits. We're not doing any doctor's appointments. We're going straight into hospice. And the house was like, what are you talking about? Like, this doesn't make sense. So I was at work trying to deal with finishing up work, hospice, and nobody knew what was going on. The staff switched. More people came in having to fix the problem. And it was just crazy. Nobody knew what happened. We couldn't get a hold of anybody. And Joni just started going downhill. We don't know. And now it's like, I don't know, it was so fast and it was so scary at the time when they can't walk, can't get what they want, and she's nonverbal. So it makes it more difficult to communicate with her. And I just was like, well, what can I do? Because nothing seems to be helping. And then they said, once you go into hospital, you just can come and visit and say hello and make sure she's okay. And they were like, she won't be in any pain. She won't, she'll still think and feel, but she won't be in any pain when she's in hospice, and they'll have doctors visiting her and we could go visit her. Well, this entire time I've been visiting her and been like, how are you doing? Trying to make her feel more comfortable, trying to figure out what happened. And it was so fast. And at the same time, I was traveling to Nashville, to other places. I was just like in it, something I've never experienced of having to be somewhere, but at the same time, having to stay close to home was really awkward and kind of painful. And now she's starting to come out of hospice. And I'm like, wow, this is great. How long is this going to last? Mm. And they say they don't know. So I'm like, okay, like hoping, like she started coming out. She went and got a haircut. She went and got a burger. She started feeling better. And I'm like, phew, I don't know what happened, but this was like an adventure I've never been on. And dealing like at times I hear she wants me to come visit her. At times I've said, thank you for coming, watching me play my softball league. And she liked the fact that I gave her a little softball and that made her day. So it's like this back and forth nonverbal relationship we go through, which is really something I've never really encountered except with my brother. But to this level is something totally different when they can't walk, can't talk.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like even in all of that, like not knowing what's going on and uncertainty about whether she's getting better or she's going downhill and you're being present or having to be away, all of that, what's continuous there that I'm hearing is your compassion, your offering of compassion for her. And that's kind of what we're talking about here today. So yeah, that's really nice.
Like 2 weeks ago, we were watching TV and I said, Joni, have you ever seen DuckTales? And I didn't realize DuckTales was on Disney. So, like I grew up with that show, but never seen it on Disney. And I was like, wow, we were going to watch this.
Nice. Thank you, Annie.
My name's Sue Omyoko. And first of all, I'm very grateful for the opportunity to practice here today with my friend Debbie and with all of you. Thank you for this opportunity. Something you said really spoke to me today. Debbie and I have practiced for a while together, and this was our girls' weekend to do Zen and to see Portland. So, yay, Portland. I'm really impressed, seriously. But we were bemoaning the fact that we were looking at the fires going around and the devastation this caused, not only to humans and to the structures and the buildings and their livelihoods, but to the natural world. Mm-hmm. And I can't talk about it because I'll cry. Mm-hmm. But it made me really think about what you said about separation is an illusion. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that most people, and especially in our country, do not understand, is a piece of land that you have, it's not yours. You're borrowing it. You're renting it. And what you do with that land is going to affect every creature, every plant, every rock that's on it for a long time. So when we were talking about who you were talking about, Merritt and Debbie and I were talking about people not understanding that we're not separate. It really occurred to us that the times that we are at our best as a country and as a world seems to be when we're facing disaster. And we were talking about 9/11 and how the country came together and the world came together and was very healing for all of us during that very trying time. And yet we've turned around as a country and completely forgotten and squandered the goodwill that was there because we all forget of merit. We all forget that separation is a illusion. Mm-hmm. So I'm very grateful for your talk today and really am pledging myself and vowing to try to find more ways to remind myself that and help mentor people to understand that separation it really is an illusion that we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's great to say, I know a lot of people say, well, we're all in the same boat. Well, some of us are on a log hanging on in a rushing river. Some of us are on yachts, and it does make a huge difference. And I think that the whole idea of merit really speaks to that. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm also very grateful that you visited with us today, that you joined us here for your girls' weekend. really came up for me, because here in the Northwest, the wildfires this time of year are pretty common. And is that sense of powerlessness at times like this that we just feel like, oh, there's, you know, I mean, yes, the land, that we don't own the land and what happened to it, but that's already happened to it. And here we are with these wildfires that are spreading and destroying homes, and people are losing, you know, losing things that they feel are theirs. And what we can do in that moment just is that offering of merit, right? It's just like, you know, may they be well in their situation and find peace in it. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Maybe one more.
This is Sally. Dedication of merit is a practice I was trained to do a lot. And I just wanted to put in a plug for vastness. Often when I'm dedicating merit, I'll think, or I'll say to myself, by the power of our interconnection, may every being in all realms, past, present, and future, may they experience the fullness of whatever it is I have to offer, and may that plant a positive seed of awakening in each of them. And I just try and make it as big as possible. You know, multiply the thing that I'm offering, multiply the sense of connection with everything. And I know that that's a practice of transformation for me, more than a practice of receiving for anyone else. But it is something I feel in a deep way. So thank you for your talk today.
Well, and thank you for sharing. That's beautiful. It's a really nice way to end, I think.